Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host for Yoga Birth Babies, and today I have a special guest, Kimberly Ann Johnson. Some of you may know her, those in the birth world already, because she's well-known in the birth and post and prenatal world, and I had been focusing more recently about postpartum healing. I don't know why. It's just really in the front of my brain. So I had picked up Kimberly's book, The Fourth Trimester, A Postpartum Guide to Healing Your Body, Balancing Your Emotions, and Restoring Your Vitality. And as I was reading it, I thought, wow, I really should interview Kimberly. She's got so much to say that I really believed in. So she said, yes. So that's who we have today. So Kimberly Ann Johnson is a sexological body worker, somatic experiencing trauma resolution practitioner, birth doula, and single mother. She specializes in helping women prepare for birth, recover from birth injuries and trauma, and heal from sexual trauma. And as I mentioned, she's the author of the best-selling book, The Fourth Trimester. She is the creator of Activate Your Inner Jaguar, an online course ushering women into full voices and sexual expression, and founder of MAGA Mama, MAGAMAMA.com. Check it out. There's a lot there. And I had a really interesting conversation with Kimberly. I think you're going to enjoy it. I will say there's a few glitchy spots in the recording. I'm going to send this off to Eddie, the person that does the magical work behind the scenes, and see what he can do. But stick through those little glitchy spots because the conversation is fantastic. Kimberly has a lot to offer. Now, before we get to that, I'm going to ask you to take a moment. If you're enjoying this, which I hope you are, if you're listening, please leave a rating and review. It helps other people find us. It helps build the support, the platform here. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, the best way and easiest way to do is scroll way down. At least when on my phone, it's way down. Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And then you'll have a spot to leave a rating and review. And we've had some fantastic reviews lately. So thank you for that. It makes the effort worth it to know that people are listening and enjoying this. Also, I'm really interested in hearing, are there topics that I have either not covered or have covered that you want more information about? And do you have any questions? I'm thinking of doing kind of like just an answer question podcast. So either let me know if you have any questions you want me to answer or topics that you're interested in. And one of my favorite things to do is research new guests. I love to find people that I believe in the work they're doing and I want to learn more about them. I'm going to admit I'm a bit of a geek that way. I really enjoy the research for these because I like to dig deeper. So if there's something you want me to talk about, tell me and I will do the research. Also, just calling out, the teacher training's almost full. We're almost done with Charlotte. We're starting, where are we next? Washington, D.C., January, February, back in New York, March, April, and then April, May in Richmond, Virginia. And Caprice and I are putting together a weekend postnatal, teaching the postnatal student and baby and me yoga training. It will be in August. So if you want to enjoy New York City in August, it's very special. Check that out. We'll have it on the website soon. And then also don't forget, I've got my online course, Who's Afraid the Pregnant Yogi. You can check it out, whosafraidthepregnantyogi.com. It is for yoga teachers who may be a little terrified when a pregnant student walks into their room. What if they don't know how to support that person? They may not. A lot of 200-hour trainings don't go too into depth with that. So I break it down to make it seamless and easy for the yoga teacher to support the pregnant student, to make them feel heard and seen. No one wants to be ignored. So you can check that out. And if you're already a prenatal teacher and you just want some new inspiration or new information, check it out too. Whosafraidthepregnantyogi.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break and when we come back, enjoy my conversation with Kimberly. Hi, Kimberly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Deborah?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for giving me some time. I'm really excited to speak with you.
Me too. Lots of juicy stuff to get into.
I really enjoyed your book. And it's funny, I don't know if you realize this, we've been on Facebook together as little Facebook friends for a while. And I'm like, oh, I've never actually talked to her. I'm like, I know your work. I've seen your Facebook stuff. And I've read your book now. But mm-hmm. I thought it's really fun to see the person behind, you know, all the social media. So I guess let's start with just tell me a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to do the work you do and what inspired you to write your book.
Sure. Motherhood inspired me to write the book. My experience becoming a new mother, which was very surprising to me. I really thought that new motherhood was going to be pretty easy for me because I've always loved kids. I've taken care of a lot of babies. And I was just really in the dark that having a new baby was something completely radically different. And it also showed me that my spiritual practices up to that point had been very male-oriented. Mm-hmm. Nothing had really shown that to me yet. So in the process of recovering from an injury that I had during birth, I came to kind of a new yogic understanding of the intersection of all of the layers of the physical, the emotional, spiritual, sexual, and it was very hard for me to find any information. So when I finally felt like I was on the other side, which was about 6 years out, I decided to compile all of the knowledge that I wish that I would have had in one place.
It's a fantastic book. Will you talk a little bit about your background as a body worker? Because you had a lot of knowledge, which I think.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm a Rolfer, which is a kind of structural body work. And I'd been a yoga teacher and practitioner for already at that point, 10 years. Mm-hmm. I knew a lot about the pelvic floor and I knew a fair amount about birth, actually. But I didn't have the tools that I needed when I had a new baby. And a lot of that had to do with specific parts of my own life story, which is that I was living in Brazil and I'd only been in a relationship for a couple of months before I got pregnant. But a lot of it didn't have to do with those specifics and had a lot to do with just what many women go through, which is like have a new baby and then everything's different. And it's surprising. And I'm happy because I wrote the book. Well, I wrote it a while ago, but it came out 2 years ago. And I think that a lot has changed for women in the past 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did. I had a lot. I had even had internal pelvic floor work before I had a baby. So I was really surprised that there was difficulty there for me.
I'm really glad, actually. I related and resonated a lot with what you said. And I like that, those that had birth experience. Like I was a doula for a good 9.5 years before having my son, and people are always like, so was it easy? I'm like, no. But I will say I thought it would be easier because I had this knowledge. So I think it's always interesting because there can be an assumption, you've worked in the birth world, you're a yoga teacher, this birthing as parenting thing should be second nature. But I appreciate your honesty that it wasn't, even with the work you did, it was, there were still some twists and turns and challenges.
Definitely. People kept saying the same things to me. They'd be like, oh, well, you're a yoga teacher, so you know how to breathe. So this is going to be easy. But I knew that wasn't true. Even when people would say that, I would just inside do like an internal eye roll, like birth is its own reckoning. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole point, is that I knew birth was going to be challenging. I just didn't know that new motherhood would be challenging for me because I also don't have a lot of internal conflicts about it. Like I wasn't a high powered career woman. I always knew I wanted to be a mother. So I wasn't wrestling with any kind of inner conflicts about it. It was actually the realization of my biggest dream to be a mother. So I just didn't understand, as many women don't, that there would be something special about that period of time. Therefore, I didn't plan for it at all, and I didn't assemble any kind of team to help me through it. So I made a ton of decisions about money and resources and living situations for the birth, but I didn't think at all about what I would need as I recovered from giving birth, because I just didn't even know that was a thing.
And I think that happens a lot. We talk about that in our prenatal yoga classes, that sometimes it's all birth and labor focused, and even the baby focused, but not parenthood. And like, what does that look like emotionally? What kind of support do I need? Who do I want around me? Who don't I want around me? So I really enjoyed your book because you just put it out there so well. In fact, as I was telling you before, I went through your book and took a ton of notes. Now, the questions I sent you was literally like a fraction of what I had, because I really went to house on that. So let's start with, if you can talk about the 5 universal postpartum needs that you think new parents should think about.
Sure. So the 5 universal postpartum needs were actually needs that I identified after I studied earth-based cultures that understand that women have a special period of time after giving birth that's different from every other part of the life cycle. So I culled them from noticing, okay, what do Indians do? What are some people doing in Hong Kong? What are some people doing in Malaysia? What are some people doing in Namibia? What are some people doing in Mexico? Oh, and these cultures where there's a name for it, just like we have a name for birth and we have a name for menopause. We have a name for this period of time, which in Ayurveda is the sacred window. In Chinese, it's sitting out the month, or sometimes they just call it confinement, that it's actually considered a discrete period of time with special needs. So the first one is an extended rest period, a 30 to 45 day window where literally you're not leaving your house and you're resting. And this, I categorize them almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. so that the need that's most primary, which is this rest, you can have the other ones, but if you don't have the lower ones, they don't help all that much. Right. So there's a profound need for rest. And, you know, I live in New York now. I just moved here and I just visited someone postpartum and she lives in like a shoebox apartment. So of course that's going to be different. Like, you know, people have to open windows and go for a walk around the block. I get it. Like, it's not like everyone lives in a country house where they can shift from their, you know, glider looking out one window into the, you know, other chaise that they've got set up for themselves. So we have to have room for modern life, but it's very important. You know, so many women go to Target 5 days postpartum or go out for dinner or go to the grocery store. And this period of time is so that you can return to optimal health. It's not because women are weak or because women can't do it. It's because throughout time, wise women and elders have known that this is what women need to recover.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
And so the community respects that rest as well and is protecting a woman so that she doesn't prolapse later. She doesn't have lower back pain for the rest of her life. She can return to feeling radiant.
But you sooner. Really touched on something, the community around her. And I feel that there's not a lot. I mean, in some areas there's community, but my immediate lens is New York. That's where I had my kids as well. And I think about a lot of us show up there either by ourselves, maybe with a partner for something bigger. And we don't always have family and community. And I love the idea of having that rest. I think I wish I had more community around too. And I had a postpartum doula and all that, but it was really hard to do that. Now, I will own that I think part of it was my own personal type A personality that I did things too quickly. But do you find that people, once they realize how important that time is, do you think they rest?
Some people do. A lot of people spend time intellectualizing or rationalizing why they can't do it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people fight with me and say, oh, that's privilege and that's this and that's that. But really, it's, I'm not saying that everyone can take 3 months off of work. But most of the people that will be listening to the podcast mm-hmm. will be able to do a little bit more than they think they can. Mm-hmm. And if you know that rest is a priority, and from a partner perspective, if the partners are listening, they understand how critical it is that their partners rest, then their own set of expectations and demands. I know tons of partners who have parental leave and don't take it or mm-hmm. take much less than they could take. So what I'm really asking people to do is to take the full amount and perhaps even extend it if you have sick days, and do the best you can within what you have mm-hmm. rather than feeding into this other side of things, which is get back to things as soon as you can. You know, if you slow down now, you're not sure what you're going to miss out on.
Well, I think that's really brilliant. I think you're 100% correct that rest is, it's so necessary. I'll say again just referring to my own experience, my first one, I didn't rest. And I am the story of what you said, too active, end up with prolapse, lower back pain. And then for my second, because of that, oh my gosh, I turned everything completely around and I had people to help. And it's not even that I had people, I let them help me. And I don't know if that mm-hmm. will resonate with other people. The letting.
Yes. And that story is common. I mean, I think probably the person most likely to read my book is someone who's already had one bad postpartum experience. Mm-hmm. And then they're willing then to say, you know what, I really did need help. I made a video for my first book and there was a woman who was around 36 weeks pregnant. And then there was a woman who had a 6-month-old. And as we talked about this all together, you could just see the woman who was pregnant kind of rolling her eyes like, God, that like, I'm not that person. I don't need that much help. Like I can do this. And then the person with the 6-month-old was just like, oh my God, you're so right. I wish I would have had that. I wish I would have done this, you know? So the purpose of the rest period is really physiological for people who, you know, need a little more technical information. Your uterus has a bunch of suspensory ligaments and ligaments are kind of like taffy. So especially if you've already done a lot of yoga or if you tend to be just flexible naturally, your ligaments are even more taffy-like because you've got relaxin in your system. And that gets tugged on, especially if you have a mechanical delivery like forceps or vacuum extraction. But even if you don't, the pushing itself is pulling on those ligaments. So you need to be outside of the field of gravity so that your organs can move into their optimal place again. And every woman who's ever had a baby will tell you like, oh yeah, I went for a walk. I did too much and I started bleeding more. Mm-hmm. Our body has to have its own time to repair. There are practices that we can still do to help that. We can do vaginal steaming. We can do self-abdominal massage. There's a lot of ways that you can encourage that process to happen. But ultimately, what we need to be doing is minimizing movements. And we're not always the best judge of that for ourselves because we feel, you know, especially the first couple days after birth, most people feel pretty adrenalized and pretty elated mm-hmm. Just to have gotten through it. It's just how the hormonal circuitry works. So sometimes it's like, and the baby also sleeps a lot at first usually. So you're like, well, this isn't that bad. Like I'm kind of sleeping a lot and I sort of feel like a champ for what I just went through. And it takes some time for all the levels of you to catch up. So we need to be on the conservative side. And I tell everyone, because I have zero doubts about what women are capable of. Like, can a woman climb Everest pregnant? Totally. Could a new mom run a marathon with a 2-month-old? Definitely. Could I probably sit in an ice bath longer than Wim Hof? I think so. So it's not like what we can do. I know we can do those things. It's like, what is the reason for doing it? Mm-hmm. You know, handstand when you're at 40 weeks. Great. But like, what is, why? Why, what is that feeding for you to need to do that? And it's a time when we have to obey physiology. and that's just not very popular, but it would eliminate a big piece of the mental health conversation that we're seeing, where everything postpartum is now being equated with a mental health problem, if we would really respect the physiology.
Especially when you start talking about the yoga, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, because I could definitely get in my soapbox about, and I teach this in my teacher training, it's like, can the body take that shape? But it's more like what you're speaking to, but should the body take that shape, and why? How are these things adding to one's experience and one's, I don't want to use necessarily the word success, but path for easefulness. So mm-hmm. I'm really glad you said that. So rest was the first universal postpartum need.
The next one is nourishing food. So these are mineral-rich, collagen-dense foods. Remember, I looked all over the world at how women were treated during this time, and that's what was in common. So depending on the person's culture, there are special foods that people eat after they give birth. In Hong Kong, they're very like black chicken, seaweed. Korea is seaweed soup. And generally, they're brothy, so very warm foods that are liquidy, so they're hydrating and high in fat and high in protein. Not people aren't eating sugar, they're not eating smoothies, they're not eating salads, they're not eating the typical things that we might consider healthy. So this is a time when we really want to focus on things that are easily digestible, but that are also going to help in terms of the organ and really all of the connective tissue repair.
That makes me think of that section in your book where you talked about nourishing the yin and Ayurvedic. And it's funny when I read that, because I'd been to India, I studied some Ayurveda, I've worked with Chinese medicine doctors, and I don't know what disconnect I had, but as I was reading that in your book, I'm like, oh my God, why didn't I do that? I was baffled. So, because in hindsight, it makes so much sense. Will you talk a little bit about that, the yin and the Ayurvedic approach to postpartum?
Yes. Yeah, so the yin comes from Chinese medicine. I mean, it was crazy in the book that I had to fit Chinese medicine and Ayurveda in one chapter. That was one of the hardest chapters to write, to try to simplify what are thousands of years of rich tradition into something that most people would understand, because, you know, we are a mental, rational culture. So we want to know, well, why would we do that? So in Ayurveda, there's three qualities, and one of them is Vata, and Vata is the wind quality. If you listen to most women talk about their postpartum experience, they're using qualities that show that their Vata is out of balance. So they'll say, I feel scattered, I feel distracted, I can't really think. Some people are like, I'm disoriented. I personally would say I feel like a floating dust particle. Like I don't know like where the ground is. That's all signs that Vata is out of balance. And Vata goes out of balance because it's an emptiness quality. So when you deliver and then your baby is not in your belly anymore, you have all this open space. Mm-hmm. So because it's kind of great because we know Vata goes out of balance. So then we can take care of that by doing the things that nourish yin or settle Vata, which are oleation. So keeping your body well oiled, as well as your intestines and insides well oiled. So you could have a tablespoon of ghee with each meal, or coconut oil or butter. You want to pay attention to warmth. So your system is more likely to get cold. It's more likely to leak energy. So you want to seal like the open gateways. You want to wear socks. You want to wear scarves. You want to have your lower back covered. And of course, people are like, well, what if I'm in Hawaii, or what if I'm this? Yes, you just want to protect yourself from the wind element. And anytime that anyone themselves goes through it, you can kind of feel that there's a different kind of vulnerability in your system. The good part of that is that when you create good habits at this time, they stick with you. They create health. When you have not so good habits at that time, they create disease. So we get a choice here. And that's why it's really powerful, because we can set in motion a lifetime of good health through the way that we care for ourselves and are cared for during this time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's oleation, warmth, and hydration. So staying hydrated, that's kind of straightforward. Drinking water, making tea, making sure that you have electrolytes that are balanced. And containment, containment has a lot to do with vata. So that's another reason to stay inside mm-hmm. and to be protected.
Yeah, these are all fantastic. I remember drinking a ton of red raspberry leaf tea after because I heard that also helped tone the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the yin aspect? Nourishing your yin. So that was some of Ayurveda before. So let's jump into the yin.
Yeah, so the yin quality, yin and yang, they're always in opposition to each other, and one doesn't exist without the other. So what's interesting is that we're a culture that's really into yang energy, production, doing. It literally, yang means the sunny side of the mountain. The yin is the shady side of the mountain. So yin is slower, yang is faster. Yin is moist, yang is dry. Yin is mothers, yang is babies. So there are these polarities. And in general, most of us have spent a lot of time in yang energy. We don't really like, even when people, this is the thing people say, and this is why I talk about the nervous system so much, is because even when people know they should rest, or even maybe want to rest, that doesn't mean they know how to rest. So it's hard because, as you know, the pace of postpartum life gets really slow. If you're used to a fast lifestyle, that's very jarring to your system. Mm-hmm. It's like operating, putting a record that's supposed to play on one speed on another speed, and then having the record having to figure out how to still make music. So nourishing your yin is really like settling in to that slowness, settling in to, resting, closing your eyes, putting away social media, and tending to those other qualities. I'm not sure if that's what you're getting
at. Yeah, no, that's absolutely it. And that's something that, as I hear you saying that, like, I find that when I need to rest, I don't always, I get a little, sometimes I totally can drop in and I'm going to be like, okay, let's meditate and let's just chill. But other mm-hmm. times it can be hard to, I find it hard to rest. Definitely. Something distracts me. My mind is going somewhere. I'm like, oh, I got to check that. And then also, you said something about the nervous system. And in your book, you talked about cross-training your nervous system. Can you mm-hmm. go into that a bit?
Sure. So, yeah, my next book is all about the nervous system. Ooh, and it's sort exciting. Of a whole other framework. But basically, when I'm talking about cross-training your nervous system, I'm talking about building capacity for activation and learning how to upregulate your system and downregulate your system. So what you're talking about, which we all experience, is being in an upregulated state where it's very hard to downregulate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this as yoga teachers where, you might think of Shavasana as a relaxing pose, but if someone comes in and they're like really anxious, you're not going to say, let's start with Shavasana. You're going to say, let's do some active standing poses first to sort of run through some of that energy so then the person could rest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ways that we could cross-train our nervous system. For some people, they're actually chronically down-regulated. So we're people who are used to hanging out more on the parasympathetic nervous system side of the spectrum who have a difficulty tolerating activation, difficulty standing up for themselves, difficulty protecting themselves in some ways. And that's out of the time because in our culture, it's really kind of accepted and okay for men to exercise the fight branch of their nervous system. But for women, it's more acceptable for us to access our flight branch or our parasympathetic freeze response.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what most of us have been conditioned to do. So we need to be able to pendulate between those so that if we need to advocate for ourselves, we know how to do that even when we're feeling threatened and that we don't go into a habitual freeze response. And conversely, if we're often in a hyperactivated state that we learn how to slow ourselves down. So it really depends. The training itself really depends on where you generally live.
Mm-hmm.
We could also say, well, as a culture, we're like overstimulated and overwhelmed, which I'd say is, you know, pretty accurate. True, although it's hard to say one thing about one kind of culture. But you definitely have to decide that you're going to step out. You know, it's kind of like, I always joke about being uncaffeinated in a caffeinated world. It's like you feel like, okay, well, everyone else is caffeinated. No wonder I feel so slow compared to everyone else. You have to kind of decide that's okay.
And I think that's important for new parents to honor, like, we can slow down when our lives are usually running a mile a minute.
Yeah, you need to. And you also need to recognize that, like, sometimes people are, like, really paranoid about their relationship changing. So they're like, week one, we're going to have date night every week because we don't want to, like, lose it. Realizing that there's ebbs and flows, and people's fear is like shit's going to hit the fan. We're never going to have sex again. And then we're like going to be in this whole other category of people that only talks about their kids and never goes out. And that's like black and white thinking. What we need to do is learn how to ride the waves so that we know, yeah, this is a period of time. You're staying in mostly for 30 to 45 days, not for 300 to 450 days. So that when you're, you know, and a lot of people go, but at the 45 day mark, I wasn't ready to go outside. I totally get it. You know, like, it's not like there's a magic wand that gets cosmically woven and then you're like, oh yeah, I'm who I was before. I'm back. It's much more gradual than that.
And it's like when the care provider says, oh, you're 6 weeks postpartum, you can go back to what you were doing before. It's not like all of a sudden the gates lift. You're like, I will do CrossFit again. Or I mean, if that's what they're doing. But yeah. Like, it's, you know, there is, it is gradual. Really? Yeah. Well, you hit on something also that I'm excited to talk to you about. Because I know in your book, a few places, you talk about, you know, a sexual relationship, a connection. And, you know, postpartum, someone may not feel like, you know, depending on what their birth was like, what their body feels like, they may have a hard time finding that sexuality again, reclaiming it, and then also maintaining a connection to their partner if they're partnered. Can you go into that a bit?
Sure. It's a huge topic, and I use the word reclaim, but for some people it's claim. And it's an enormous opportunity to move outside of our stereotypes of what sex is, what sexuality is supposed to look like. And for many people, those things spiral up to the surface about, you know, do I owe my partner orgasms? There's a lot of implicit and explicit desires and fears that rise to the surface for so many reasons, beginning all the way back at Adam and Eve and, you know, continuing through so many other levels of power and archetypes. I don't think that I suggest that people should be having sex. I think what I'm interested in is how we can mature together, evolve together through parenthood in partnership. So, and I want to say as well that I'm a single parent. So, I'm saying this as a single parent, and I split up from my daughter's father when she was 9 months old. So I've been on my own parenting that whole time. Nevertheless, for the people who are partnered, it's really more about maintaining connection. What the research shows is that men want to stay connected. Women think men want sex or know how to ask for, but the research bore out that in the first year postpartum, what men really wanted was to feel seen and recognized and acknowledged. They wanted to feel important. So it's a really good time to prioritize the connection between the parents and for partners to protect the birthing person so that that person has what they need in the postpartum time. It's not a time to divide things up democratically because the person who gave birth is far and away the person who needs the most. And if those needs are taken care of and protected, then the relationship usually does fairly well and even grows and deepens. So I recommend, and I have lots of kind of conversation starters in the book. I just had a fourth trimester card deck come out. So those conversation starters are in the deck as well, of checking in each day. Because, you know, many times after you have a baby, you know, in the old days, you might have been thinking about sex during the day. You might have, you know, looked at a picture or two. After you have a new baby, most women are not doing that. And so sex starts to feel like it's a totally separate thing that you flip on and off. It doesn't feel like something that's so easy just slide into. And a lot of people say, I don't even know, like, we haven't even talked to each other. We barely even looked at each other, let alone talked to each other. So it's a really good time to just rediscover each other. And it's a hard time to know what you need because so many things are shifting and changing. But it's what our evolution is calling for. And it's a place where female pleasure comes to the center because penetration post-delivery is not what most people want right away. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good opportunity to just explore all the different other ways of connecting.
I like what you said about how partners may just want to feel seen and heard, because I can imagine, and I'm trying to look at it again through the lens of a partner, that the birthing person's focus goes to the baby and the partner might start to feel a little left out. So that connection, it doesn't have to necessarily be intercourse sexual. It could just be, again, like talking to each other and keeping that foundation of what even brought them together. And then maybe that would lead to more of a physical relationship, you know, physical connection a little bit down the road. Is that making sense? Is that what you're talking? Is that kind of what
Definitely.
I'm hearing? Yeah.
And also just showing care towards each other. So many people at the time of the birth, the baby comes and then both people look in towards the baby and they forget to keep looking at each other, both metaphorically and literally. And then everything is about the baby and solving problems with the baby instead of just like, how are you doing as a mother? How are you doing as a father? How are you doing as a parent right now?
And I think that theme needs to continue. I think it's really easy to get stuck in just the parent relationship and dynamic and forget that, you know, if they are, you know, the couple's a couple, if they're actually couples. So I think I like that theme and I urge people to continue. My husband and I put a lot of effort into connecting, just like talking to each other beyond the kids. Like, we really make a connection. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not talk about our kids right now. Let's just check in. How are you? How are you doing? What's going on with your day? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? And sometimes that it feels a little strained, to be honest. But I think it's going to help us, hopefully, in the long run that, you know, eventually the kids will not always be around. And we have to make sure that we still have a connection of whatever, you know, which originally started the family. So I would love to talk a little bit about, because we're talking about the connection of a partner, but someone may not feel even ready to connect to a partner. I've talked to a lot of people about their postpartum body, and mm-hmm. I've had students tell me they're angry at their body for how the birth unfolded. Some people just feel a disconnect. Some people have suffered a lot of trauma during the birth. Can you talk about how one can reconnect and rediscover and appreciate their new body, especially if it's been a little tumultuous in that period?
Mm-hmm. This is a tough one for me. I mean, I think there's sort of two directions. One part is just trauma, right? So your birth turned out totally differently than you thought it was going to. You wanted one thing, something else happened. You weren't supported. Some core wound was activated that is causing tons of discomfort. That's one thing. And I should say that a lot of, with the partnership relationship stuff, some of that stuff is continuations of dynamics that got set in place during pregnancy or labor that never kind of got cleaned up. That's making it difficult for communication. there are lots of practices to heal from difficult births. I just made an audio series called Healing from a Difficult Birth based on the work of Pam England's Birth Story Medicine. And I'm also a somatic experiencing trauma resolution practitioner, so the work of Peter Levine. There's lots of practitioners out there that are available to help someone in a somatic way renegotiate their birth. And spoiler alert, if you're having a lot of depression or anxiety, I really recommend that before meds or going to someone who only knows how to deal with one quadrant of your health, because the postpartum time is very integrated and very embodied. And without really healing the physical part of the trauma, and I don't just mean incontinence and prolapse, but including that, we find ourselves in behaving the same way, even though we wish we weren't behaving that way, because our body hasn't had a chance to renegotiate whatever it was that happened, which in the case of birth is usually something you could not say, something you could not do, a movement you couldn't make, a way that you felt powerless. And sometimes it's from a birth that went really well, but there were some huge pieces in it that your psyche couldn't digest. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is like the body image part of it, which quite frankly, I'm a little impatient with because, you know, it's a magnificent thing. And I realize people are like, oh, you're so woo-woo and like that's spiritually nice and everything. But like, I liked my six pack and I get it. But at some point we just have to make a choice as women, right? We just have to make a choice that I'm just going to appreciate my body as it is. Day by day, mm-hmm. or we just live in the hell realm of comparison of when we were younger and how other people look and what we were like before. So to me, that's actually just kind of a mental discipline. And there's other people who talk extensively about this and probably have more patience even than I do for the topic. But I just feel like there's so many ways that we can integrate a birth experience, a pregnancy experience, which inevitably brings up all of the miscarriages, fertility cycles, you know, everything that we go through as women, gynecological surgeries, all of that can rise to the surface during a birth. So there's a lot of ways that we can become more whole and more integrated when we recognize the wisdom that the body has. So I'm not saying everyone needs to love their body. I just read an article that's like equally sort of oppressive. But the way I always think about it is if you have a partner, they're just kind of getting like a different partner every day because our bodies are changing so fast.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying about that. Yeah, I wasn't leaning into more of the body image. It was more I've had students come back and they just felt disappointed. They wanted their birth in one way and they then felt like, well, why didn't my body open up? Well, I was told failure to progress. And what's wrong with me? I have the lemon. Right. I'm the lemon body. Yeah.
Nothing their body didn't do. That is a whole other, like,
well, yeah, that's,
right? That's a whole other thing.
But they do feel that.
And that's why birth story medicine is good, because the birth story medicine gives you a perspective on what exactly is happening, right? Because again, if we go back to the nervous system, your body, quote unquote, failure to progress. Essentially, you didn't feel safe enough to dilate. And some people would say, well, but I did feel safe. I thought I was safe. Again, yeah, you thought you were, but your body did not think you were. There was something prohibiting that from happening. Because if you're in a parasympathetic state with no perception of threat, that's where sphincter dilation happens. It could be that you have scar tissue from an earlier procedure. Mm-hmm. It could, you know, there's could be a lot of reasons for it, but it's just not random.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm going to think about that because I actually do like a lot of Pam England's stuff. I did the Birthing from Within mentor training, so I'm going to sit with that for a little bit because that definitely, she talks about, you know, clearly she talks about that. So I'm gonna actually reread that. I wanted, if you'd be okay with talking about, I love that you really know the pelvic floor. It's something that I study a lot and I talk about a lot. Would you mind talking about your own healing journey of your pelvic floor? Because you were quite open and honest about it in their book and the domains of pelvic health in your healing journey.
Yeah. So essentially what happened was when I was giving birth, I tore, which is a pretty common thing to happen. And then I had stitches, and afterwards, my stitches didn't heal very well. But I didn't really know why. And I would ask my midwives to come and check them because I could feel that something wasn't right because they were hurting and burning. And then I also was having terrible lower back and sacral iliac pain that I'd never had before. But I sort of figured, okay, well, I just had a baby and, you know, I had a 26-hour labor, kind of average labor. But I thought, you know, I was pregnant for 42 weeks and 5 days. Okay, you know. But then my symptoms actually started getting worse. So I became fecally incontinent, which means you poop in your pants before you have the urge to do that. So I would just arrive in the bathroom and there'd be poop in my underwear and I'd just be totally confused. I had a prolapsed uterus and cervix. I think that that happened a little later. I'm not sure, but about 2 weeks postpartum, I was having a lot of trouble breastfeeding and I was alone. So I would walk back and forth carrying, baby carrying essentially about a mile to a hospital where I could get breastfeeding support. And they had a milk bank, which they wouldn't let me have the milk because I didn't have a premature baby, but I didn't know that at the time. So I was going there to try to get help and see if I could get extra milk because I wasn't producing enough. And it was just sort of like one thing was leading to another. The stress of the situation was then, of course, affecting the breast milk. And then here I am walking back and forth carrying a heavy baby at the same time as my pelvic floor is not strong enough. And I definitely was not staying out of gravity because I was having to cook for myself and go to the grocery store. And I lived in Rio and I didn't have a car and it's cobblestone streets. So it does, strollers don't really work on cobblestones. So, yeah, I just kind of had all the bad symptoms except for urinary incontinence. And like I said, it was confusing because I had been really healthy, walked a lot, done some yoga, swam in the ocean a lot when I was pregnant. So I just was confused. But eventually, the pieces that I put together were that I thought I had a fourth degree tear because I was fecally incontinent. So usually that means that you torn some of your anal sphincter, or you damage those nerves. So, and when I had some internal scar tissue work, that's what it felt like. The path of the scar felt like it went perineally all the way. Mm-hmm. But then when later I presented on it in Rio, I went to a birth conference like 2.5 years when I was postpartum and I talked about my recovery process. My midwife happened to be in the audience and she was just horrified because, first of all, midwives take it personally when you tear, but also because she said that was not true at all. She said that I was only a stage 2 tear and that it wasn't even close to a 3. So that was confusing to me because I didn't understand why my symptoms were so bad if I hadn't torn that much. So I still don't know. But what I do know now is that they used a type of suturing material that they hadn't used before and my body just rejected it. So the stitching opened back up, but then they didn't tell me that and they didn't restitch me because it was too late to do any restitching. So that was sort of the step-by-step of what happened, but how I helped myself had to be through all of the different layers. So I did get some internal pelvic floor work. I was told that by a doctor I needed a full surgical reconstruction, but I knew that I didn't want that. So I went to a PT. She told me it's not the worst case scenario. So that made me feel a little better. And then just by divine providence, I met a woman who became my mentor for a time, Ellen Heed, who was doing a study on postpartum health and scar tissue remediation. So I received 3 sessions from her. I also had a diastasis. So during one session, my diastasis knit back together, which was really surprising to both of us because we both felt it happening as it was happening. Mm-hmm. And I regained like full anal sensation and my whole anal situation changed. And so I also was having a lot of pain at my vaginal opening and the stitches were kind of pulling it asymmetrically. So that also changed a lot. And as a result, I decided to start doing that work because it was just obvious to me how needed it was, and how the reason that people aren't doing it is because it's the genitals and it's contentious. But I realized like how many women need the work, and that's just borne out over the years. I have huge waiting lists in every city where I work, and it actually became so prohibitive that I stopped doing the work because I realized I had to put my energy to more systemic level shift, because I would never be able to help people one-on-one or even train enough people to do the one-on-one work. So I still do a little bit of it, but now I'm really focused on, I co-funded a fourth trimester vaginal steam study project. I've got a few pilot things happening in the works to really change the whole structure around birth and postpartum, so that we can minimize the amount of injuries that are happening, minimize the amount of trauma. But also, I believe that you can heal almost any traumatic birth if you have the right setup postpartum. I think that the postpartum needs that attending to them are actually a universal plan, so that women can emerge from that without birth trauma.
I love everything you said. Absolutely. That is something I'm very passionate about. Like, how can we, I don't know if the word's resolve, but create a foundation that birth trauma is not as prevalent as it is. And I really thank you for sharing your healing story, because a lot of people, like, and I talk about my prolapse and my pelvic floor, but I think the more people open up and talk about it, the less, like you said, it's people, when I teach it in prenatal training, people don't even like to use the proper words. If we can't honor the pelvic floor as another part of our body that needs attention, it's going to go unhealed, and people shouldn't live with what you had, you know, or whatever people have, any sort of incontinence. I have so many students that find a way to deal with it, but it affects their quality of life. So it's, thank you for being so generous with what you're sharing and the work you're doing. It's huge. Before we start to take a quick break and for one final tip, is there anything else about the work you're doing or about your book that I haven't asked about that you want to make sure we touch on?
I think we've covered a lot.
I know. We really did. I've enjoyed this. All right. So we're going to take a super quick break. And when we come back, if you can think of one final tip or piece of advice you'd like to offer new or expectant parents. Okay. We'll be right back. Okay. We are back. So what do you have?
I would just share some of the, or I should say, save some of the energy that's going towards the birth and place it to what's coming after the birth, which is hard because the birth's a really big deal. It really does matter. It's really important. But all of the things that happen after, in the 6 weeks, are as important, if not more important. So try to remember that and make a few choices, whether that's financial or emotional or even relational. Most new parents say right away, we want to just do this ourselves. We want to just, you know, have our own little nest, and we don't want people around. Most new parents also regret that later on, knowing, you know, maybe not New Yorkers, because the whole housing situation here is a little hard and it's hard to have guests in your house, but you really do need other adults around, even to do simple things like take out the trash or get you a glass of water or hold your baby so you can take a shower. And I really recommend that, you know, partners retroactively want to know, like, well, why aren't we connected and what's going on sexually? But I guarantee that if you take care and protect that sanctuary time, the transition back into a sexual relationship is so much smoother. There's so much less resentment. There's so many less unfulfilled needs, so much less resentment, because the partner doesn't have to be the one to fulfill all those needs. That's the mistake people make. In fact, they're not really the best person to do that. They have their own needs at that time. Mm-hmm. So it's a time to reevaluate how you receive help and how you create community.
This is great. Thank you. And where can people find your work?
I'm all over the interwebs. They can find me on Instagram at Magamamas, MAGAMAMAS. Just as an FYI, MAGA means sorceress in Portuguese. and it's not aging well here in the U.S. It's become increasingly problematic, so I do need to do a rebrand, but I just finished writing. Well, I just turned in the first draft of my next book, so the rebrand is coming, but I have to do that first. My website is magamama.com, and then I also have a podcast that's the same thing, Magamama, Sex, Birth, and Motherhood.
Oh, this has been so
great. And you
can
get the book on Amazon or through my publisher, Shambhala. So there's the fourth trimester book, there's fourth trimester cards, and then upcoming there'll be a fourth trimester journal.
That's great. And I'll make sure I have links to all of that. I really enjoyed the book. I've been given a lot of books to read, and then having the podcast, I don't always choose to do that. But I sought you out because I had heard a lot about your book, and I just thought it was fantastic. It was well written. It was concise. It wasn't over the top. It was just, you were really speaking to a lot of people. So thank you for putting your work out there.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, go enjoy your day. Thanks so much.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.